Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Genesis 21. I'm going to cover verses 8 through 21. I will entitle this audio, God Protects Hagar and Ishmael. Our context is this. In the first seven verses of this chapter, Genesis 21, we read the account of the birth of Isaac. In the previous chapter, chapter 20, we had the story of Sarah ending up in King Abimelech of Gerar's harem. Now let's do a little geography first here. The birth of Isaac could have happened at Gerar. If you look at Gaza on the southeastern Mediterranean coast and think of an upside-down equilateral triangle, Gaza is the northwest corner of the triangle. If you go to the east, to the northeast corner of the triangle is Hebron. And then if you go south, right in the middle of this upside-down equilateral triangle, you see Beersheba. Now, if you look at Gaza, the northwestern base of that upside-down equilateral triangle, and if you slide down the left side of that upside-down equilateral triangle and go to the southeast about 9 or 10 miles into the interior of that triangle, you'll see the little kingdom of Gerar, or somewhere around there. They're not exactly sure where it was. And that is where Abraham and Sarah were in the previous chapter, and they have moved on down from Gerar, most probably moved from Gerar, continuing down that left side of the equilateral triangle to the tip of that upside-down equilateral triangle, which is Beersheba, and that's where they are now. Now, Abraham and Sarah are either having Isaac in Gerar, or they go down and have Isaac in Beersheba. It's not clear, but that's basically what the geography is right now. And we're going to assume that right now they're in Beersheba in our section here in verses 8 through 21. So we start now in Genesis 21, 8, 9, and 10. The child, thus Isaac, grew and was weaned. And Abraham made a great feast on the day that Isaac was weaned. Now Sarah saw the son of Hagar the Egyptian, whom she had borne to Abraham, mocking. Therefore she said to Abraham, drive out this maid and her son, for the son of this maid shall not be an heir with my son Isaac. Now, when was Isaac weaned? Hard to say when that was. John Gill says, NIV Study Bible speculates at the age of two or three, and that makes sense because that's when people in the East wean their kids. I remember when my children were little and my wife and I were reading the literature of La Leche League. My wife actually joined a chapter to teach you about how to breastfeed children. They would constantly say, well, you know, people are going to mock you for breastfeeding your child up to 2 years old. Or 3 years old, but in the ancient world, they did it up until the age of three. It's amazing how cultural differences can cause a lot of tension. But I remember that because we've nursed our children for a long time, at least 2 years, I think. I can't remember, but of course, you can hear the experts. They didn't have the internet back then, but if they had the internet, the experts would be saying, no, don't do that. It's not good for the child. Well, yes, it is good for the child. The ancient world knew some things, had some things right. And so this was 2 or 3 years when Isaac was weaned. Now, the custom back then was to have a big feast when the baby was weaned. I guess this means the mama is free now, and so she's getting, wee, let's have a feast. I don't know. So, Sarah saw the son of Hagar the Egyptian. Of course, that son is Ishmael. Saw the son of Hagar the Egyptian, Ishmael, mocking, as any New American Standard Bible has it, mocking. The ESV has laughing. I don't think that's nearly as good because you can laugh for other reasons besides mocking. Maybe the ESV is more accurate, but most people interpret this as mocking because of what happens later, because Sarah got ticked off and says, let's get rid of this Hagar. Let's kick her out of the house, Abraham. Now, John Gill gives some options as to how this laughing was done or why it was done. Option number one, Ishmael was mocking the name of Isaac, which means he laughs. Or laughs. I don't know what's to be mocked about laughs. I don't know why that's a good option. Option number two, Ishmael could have been treating Isaac contemptuously as a younger brother. I mean, Ishmael is now about 14 years old and he's making fun. Well, shoot, he's about 16 or 17 years old and he's making fun of a 3-year-old kid or a 2-year-old kid. Please. That would be pretty disgusting. It had to be pretty disgusting, whatever happened here, because they got kicked out of the house in a desert environment. Option number three, Ishmael could have been boasting that he was the firstborn. Well, yeah, look at Isaac, he was born, but who's the firstborn? I've got the inheritance. That sounds likely to me. Boasting that he was the firstborn and boasting that the inheritance belonged to him. Supporting that option is what we read in verse 10.
Sarah says to Abraham, drive out this maid, drive out Hagar and her son Ishmael, for the son of this maid shall not be an heir with my son Isaac. So the inheritance was large on Sarah's mind as she pleaded with Abraham, and that makes you think that there must have been something in this fight between Ishmael and Isaac that had to do with the inheritance. So I suspect that's what Ishmael was complaining about. You know, these people in the East, they really cared about that inheritance, as you know from the story of Jacob and Esau. Now, Sarah, we're going to look at whether Sarah was behaved properly when she asked Abraham to do this, but she was entirely correct when she said, the son of this maid, Ishmael, the son of Hagar, shall not be an heir with my son Isaac. She was entirely correct. God never promised that the covenant promises would go through Ishmael. We read that in Galatians 4:29, but as at the time he, referring to Ishmael, who was born according to the flesh, according to Hagar, persecuted him, persecuted Isaac, who was born according to the Spirit. So it is now also. And of course, Paul is talking about the fleshly legalist in Galatia persecuting the spiritual Christians. Likewise, the fleshly Ishmael, born of the flesh, born of Hagar, not according to the promise, persecuted Isaac, who was born of the promise. The application here is obvious. Legalists love to persecute spiritual Christians by calling them antinomians. I think of certain theological schools that love to do that to my theological school, New Covenant Theology. Now, let's look at the question. Was Sarah right to say to Abraham, drive out Hagar? John Gill said, yes, she was right. And the reason she was right to say that is because God approved of it. We go down to verse 12 and we read this. God said to Abraham, do not be distressed because of the lad and your maid. Whatever Sarah tells you, listen to her, for through Isaac your descendant shall be named. So in other words, God said, Sarah's right. Ishmael shall not be the heir. Isaac shall be the heir. Adam Clark disagrees and says, no, she was not right to do that. Here's what he says, quote, both Sarah and Abraham have been accused of cruelty in this transaction because every word reads harsh to us. And it does. I mean, he put her out in the desert with just enough bread and water to go far enough to die in the desert. Well, the fact that it was so cruel, but yet God approved it, shows how high-handed Hagar's sin was, in my opinion. She must have really been sinning to say, the inheritance is mine. I don't care what the promises to God were. The promises to Abraham were by God. The promises to the patriarchs. I don't care what they were. The inheritance is mine. She was trying to usurp God's authority concerning the covenant. Now, as the NIV Study Bible says, this driving away of Hagar was an effective disinheritance. Everybody knew Ishmael is not going to inherit now when Sarah and Ishmael left the household. The Hebrew word, therefore, drive away is also translated as divorce. So in effect, Ishmael was divorced from the house of Abraham. So it was a serious thing here. Now, one more point, verse 10. Sarah says, drive out this maid and her son. And she could have just been saying, drive out Hagar, because where Ishmael goes, Hagar's got to go, and Ishmael needs to go, so Hagar will go with him. But it could be that Hagar was joining with Ishmael in the mocking of Isaac, which wouldn't surprise me. Yes, isn't polygamy wonderful? We go to verse 11, Genesis 21. The matter distressed Abraham greatly because of his son. Again, polygamists always have family problems. You can count on it. Why was he distressed because of his son Ishmael? Well, it could be just because of parental love, as the NIV Study Bible suggests, but there were also legal reasons. It was illegal to disinherit the son of a slave concubine, and Abraham just did that. He broke the law. We know that it was illegal to do that from the Nootsi tablets, according to the NIV Study Bible, the Nootsi tablets being north of the Tigris River, just south of Nineveh, present-day Mosul, big famous archaeological find there. And so that's very interesting. Those ancient Near Eastern people had a complicated legal customs which were law, actually, and they were very serious about it. And Abraham just broke it. So the next question is did God approve of Sarah's request for an illegal action? Well, yes, he did. We just read verse 12. God says, listen to Sarah. So, yeah, he approved of it, all right. The NIV Study Bible justifies God by saying that God overruled human law in this instance, which is true. Human custom is not going to trump God's law or God's will or command. But still, that the fact that it was a violation of the law made it even harder for Abraham to do this. He had to send his own son, his firstborn son, actually, into the desert where there's no water. Abraham was the father of many nations, but look at the stuff that God required of him. Send your son into the desert. And Isaac, the son of the promise, God's going to tell him later to send him to the top of Mount Moriah and sacrifice him. I'm telling you, it's a tough thing to follow God. It is tough. But boy, if you obey his tough commands, you are blessed. And we're still talking about Abraham 4,000 years later. Genesis 21, 12 through 13. But God said to Abraham, "Do not be distressed because of the lad and your maid. Whatever Sarah tells you, listen to her. For through Isaac your descendants shall be named." And of course that means through Isaac and not Hagar. Through Isaac and not Ishmael, your descendants shall be named. And of the son of the maid, that's Ishmael, son of Hagar, I will make a nation also because he is your descendant. Notice how God softens the blow a little bit, says, don't worry about Hagar being thrown out into the desert because we're going to make him a nation too. I'm going to make him a nation also. Now we read this, but God said to Abraham, and don't think about it too much, but I always think about it. I wonder, how does God speak to Abraham? Is it by an articulate voice or by an impulse on his mind? John Gill suggests those two things. It could have been a dream, could have been a vision. We don't know. But however, God communicated to Abraham. And he says to Abraham, it's through Isaac your descendants will be named. This was mentioned in Romans 9 by Paul, Romans 9 verses 6, 7, and 8. But it is not as though the word of God has failed. He's talking about how come no Jews believed back then, or very few did. For they are not all Israel who are descended from Israel, nor are they all children because they are Abraham's descendants. But through Isaac your descendants will be named. Paul is referring to the fact that Abraham had a lot of descendants who weren't of the covenant promise, namely the Ishmaelites. And so, therefore, in those days, they got the non-believing Jews. They're not Israel either. He's making an analogy. It's through Isaac your descendants will be named. In other words, because of the covenant promise, it goes through Abraham and Isaac and Jacob down to Jesus. It's not the children of the flesh or the children of God, but the children of the promise are regarded as descendants. So Paul uses this phrase, through Isaac your descendants will be named, to show that Christians are the true Israel, or the new Israel, because we are sons of the covenant when we believe in Christ. Hebrews 11, 17 through 19. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises was offering up his only begotten son. It was he to whom it was said, in Isaac your descendants shall be called. So you see that phrase, through Isaac your descendants shall be called, which we read here in Genesis 21, verse 12, is quoted twice prominently in the New Testament. Now in verse 13, the sweetener and of the son of the maid I will make a nation. Ishmael, the son of Hagar, I will make a nation. And that nation was understood traditionally to be Arabs. Interestingly, the scripture never specifically says so. People actually debate this. I found an internet discussion about this. I'm not going to get into it. I'm going to assume they were the Arabs. Here's what Wikipedia says. They, Ishmael and his Egyptian wife, had 12 sons who became 12 tribal chiefs through the regions from Havilah to Shur. And then they say that's from Assyria to the border of Egypt, which is through the desert regions there. In the Middle East, they have Havilah near Assyria, whereas most people have Havilah in southwest Arabia, so I question that. But the point is, it's in the Arabian and the desert areas, and so it makes sense to think that Ishmael's 12 sons were Arabians. And I'm going to take it that way and agree with tradition this time. Now, as we read the next verse, we're going to see, or the next several verses, that Ishmael ended up living in the wilderness of Paran, which is right north of the Sinai Peninsula, and which is a good place for Arabs to be, the Bedouin Arabs. So it's not a surprise that he would be a father of the Arabs. So there's probably a good reason for that tradition. We go now to Genesis 21, verse 14. So Abraham rose early in the morning and took bread and a skin of water and gave them to Hagar, putting them on her shoulder, and gave her the boy and sent her away. And she departed and wandered about in the wilderness of Beersheba. That's why we know now in Genesis 21 that Abraham's got his family in Beersheba now, which, remember, is it's about one-third of the way north of the southern tip of the Dead Sea, about halfway going west, halfway to the Mediterranean. That's roughly where it is. We'll talk about Beersheba a little bit more in a minute. But first of all, we note that this was in the morning that Abraham got up and sent out Hagar and Ishmael. Abraham wasted no time in obeying the Lord's command, which makes me think it was at nighttime. He might have had a dream. God might have come to him at night. However, the very next morning, and it must have been very distasteful, a very rough thing to do, to kick your kid out of your house. Talk about tough love. But, you know, you don't mock God's plans and his commands. I mean, these promises to Abraham were a big deal, as we see all the way through these patriarchal narratives, a big, big deal. And you're going to start messing with that? Tough love, though. Abraham sent him out into the wilderness. Now, he put a bread and a skin of water, which was just enough to put on Hagar's shoulder, which is not like putting a bunch of food and water on a pack animal and send it out with Hagar. Abraham gave Hagar only enough food that she could carry. And as a result, she and Ishmael almost died in the desert. He could have given her a pack animal. He could have given her servants, but he didn't. Now, the options, let's consider some options as to why Abraham acted this way. Option number one, this small amount of food was all Sarah would allow. That's John Gill's first suggestion. Really? So Sarah's in charge of the family? Hey, no, Abraham's in charge of the family. We're not going to put this off on Sarah. I don't like option number one. Here's option number two by Gill. Abraham was ordered by God just to give him that little bit of food as chastisement for their ill behavior. And even though God would chastise them for their ill behavior, he would later show them grace by showing them an oasis where they could drink water, and he made them a great nation and so forth. So the idea is put them out there in the desert where there's no food, just enough food to not live very long, but then I'm going to rescue them and show grace and show there's going to be a great nation that comes from Ishmael so God will get the glory. Well, that's John Gill's second option. That's a little bit better. I like his third option. Abraham gave them enough water to get to some oasis, enough water and food, and he was planning to go to that oasis later to resupply them. But unfortunately, Hagar got lost in the wilderness, and she almost died. Well, that takes the burden off of Abraham a little bit. I'm not sure how we can look at this, but we do know he was ordered by God to send out Hagar and Ishmael, but we don't know that he was ordered by God just to send him out with that little bit of food. That's speculation as to why he did that. But for whatever reason, out she goes. Abraham gave Hagar Ishmael and sent her away. And she departed and wandered about in the wilderness of Beersheba. Now, as I said, if you look at Gaza on the southeastern coast of the Mediterranean Sea, and you go about, if you consider Gaza, Hebron, and Beersheba as an upside-down equilateral triangle, Gaza at the northwestern corner, the northeastern corner, you have Hebron, and then the tip of that upside-down equilateral triangle is Beersheba. It's about one-third of the way up of the Dead Sea, about halfway to the Mediterranean coast. It's interesting, the way I try to locate these places, I try to use the Dead Sea as a marker. So does Easton's dictionary, which says that Beersheba is nearly midway between the southern end of the Dead Sea and the Mediterranean. More precisely, it's sort of the top third of the bottom, the top part of the bottom third of the Dead Sea, if you want to locate it a little bit more accurately. But anyway, Beersheba, here's Easton's Illustrated Dictionary quote. It means well of the oath, beer as well. Sheba is either oath or seven, well of the oath or well of seven, a well dug by Abraham. If it's well of the seven, notice that today there, in the 19th century when Easton's was writing, there were two principal wells and five smaller ones, therefore the name. Or it could be of the oath, because Abraham and Abimelech of Gerar entered into an oath there, which we'll read about in our next audio. On reopening this well, Isaac gave it the same name, Beersheba. It was a favorite place of abode for both of these patriarchs. It is mentioned among the cities given to the tribe of Simeon. From Dan to Beersheba, a distance of about 144 miles, became the usual way of designating the whole promised land, and it passed into a proverb. After the return from the captivity, the phrase is narrated from Beersheba until the Valley of Hinnom, that's near in Jerusalem, because the northern 10 tribes were gone by that time. So Beersheba still located the southern extremity of Israel, proverbially. The name is not found in the New Testament. It is still called by the Arabs Beer Es Sheba, well of the seven, where there are to the present day, that's 19th century, two principal wells and five smaller ones. Now, Beersheba is still there today because I was there a couple of years ago, and my wife and I were taking a tour with a delightful Israeli tour guide, just the tour guide, my wife and me in his little compact car, so it was quite an experience. And we stopped at Beersheba, and this is Ben-Gurion's favorite place. He loved the Negev. He thought this was the place where there was less Arabs, so there would be less conflict if Israel could start their new country. And so he had a little compound. There was kind of like a military compound with a garden is the way I like to describe it. The housing was very simple, one-story simple. And he had a little small bedroom there, a little desk. And then behind his desk, there was bookshelves full of books. And they were in English because Ben-Gurion read a lot of English books. And that was interesting to me. And so there was a little rope that separated the library from the other part of the room. So I gently stepped over the rope so I could see the titles on the books. As I stepped over the rope, an alarm goes off. Wonk, wonk, wonk. And I could just picture all those Israeli soldiers with their automatic weaponry pointed at me, coming around the corner, pointing those things at my wife and me. And I step back over the rope and the thing doesn't stop going wonk, wonk. And so I got my wife and said, let's get out of here. And we just quickly went to the garden and started looking at the flowers. And nobody came. They didn't catch us. I'm here today to tell you the story. Beersheba is a beautiful place. You look out over the desert. It's way up on a hill there, and you can look out over the desert and see forever. There's all kinds of historical sites there. It's a place that really, if you go to Israel, you ought to try to go to Beersheba. Well, anyway, that's where all this occurred. This is where Abraham kicked out Ishmael into the desert. Genesis 21, verses 15 through 18. When the water in the skin was used up, she left the boy, that's Hagar, left the boy Ishmael under one of the bushes. Why did she do that? Because bushes were their shade. Now remember, Ishmael is about 16, 17 years old. Then she went, sat down opposite him about a bow shot away, for she said, do not let me see the boy die. And she sat opposite him and lifted up her voice and wept. Now she wept, but Ishmael was crying too. In verse 17, God heard the lad crying. And the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, what is the matter with you, Hagar? Do not fear, for God has heard the voice of the lad where he is. Arise, lift up the lad and hold him by the hand, for I will make a great nation of him. So you see, this was a severe mercy. Sure, it was tough getting kicked out of the desert, but God was with her the whole time. He wasn't going to let her die out there. She had sinned. She had mocked the promised seed, but God had mercy and compassion on her, on both of them. Both of them were crying because they both thought they were going to die. Now, of course, Hagar had forgotten the promise of God, which she had received when she was pregnant with Ishmael at Beer Lahai-Roi, which is even further south and over toward Egypt, near the wilderness of Shur as you go into Egypt. This is when she had been kicked out of the house before she got kicked out twice. This is the first time in Genesis 6, verses 10 and 11. The angel of the Lord said to her, this is at Beer Lahai-Roi, the well of the living one who sees me, I will greatly multiply your offspring, and they will be too many to count. The angel of the Lord, that's probably Jesus, said to her, you have conceived and will have a son. You will name him Ishmael, for the Lord has heard your cry of affliction. Ishmael means he hears, for the Lord has heard your cry of affliction. So she's had two cries of affliction, but she forgot the first one where God promised her, and God reminded her here the second time at Beersheba. The first time was at Beer Lahai-Roi in the desert toward Shur, and now this is at Beersheba, same thing. I'm going to make a great nation of your child, so quit crying. The angel of God is speaking to her as at Beer Lahai-Roi, is speaking to her at Beersheba. That angel of God is either a created angel or perhaps the Son of God, Jesus. I prefer to think it's Jesus. Whenever I see angel of God, I always say that's Jesus. It's just easier to think that way, even though you can't prove it beyond a shadow of a doubt. Jesus. Now, this angel of God called to Hagar from heaven. That was probably with an articulate voice, John Gill says. Now, you know, people don't get blessed with articulate voices or with dreams or visions except in extremely difficult places. I just did a little talk in my church a couple of days ago about that. Signs are things seen. Faith is the essence of things not seen. Well, if God expects us to have faith, why would he ever give us a sign? But he does. He gave Paul signs. He gave Abraham signs. I got lots of examples. Here's another example here. God appears to Hagar or calls to her with an audible voice. Why? Because she was in trouble. A lot of times your faith needs to be helped out. But if God's not going to give you a vision every day to help you make decisions, he's not going to short circuit your ability, your responsibility as a human being to make decisions. But this was an extreme circumstance. Now, God repeats that promise, I will make a great nation of Ishmael in verse 18. That promise is repeated many times at Beer Lahai-Roi in Genesis 16:10 when Hagar was pregnant and kicked out the first time. Genesis 16:10 says this, moreover, the angel of the Lord said to Hagar, I will greatly multiply your descendants so that they will be too many to count. Genesis 17, at Ishmael's circumcision ceremony. Genesis 17:20, as for Ishmael, I have heard you. Behold, I will bless him and will make him fruitful and will multiply him exceedingly. He shall become the father of 12 princes and I will make him a great nation. And then in a couple of verses preceding, which we just read, Genesis 21:13, and the son of the maid I will make a nation also, because he is your descendant. So, at Beer Lahai-Roi, when Hagar is pregnant with Ishmael, there's the promise of a great nation. Later on, she goes back to Abraham's household. Ishmael is about 13 years old or so. Abraham circumcises him, and there's the same promise, I will make of him a great nation. And then right here at Beersheba, where she's kicked out, Hagar is kicked out, God says, I'm going to make a great nation of your son again. So it was repeated three times. We go to Genesis 21, verse 19. Then God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water. And she went and filled the skin with water and gave the lad a drink. Now, the first question we might ask is, why did God need to open Hagar's eyes so that she could see the well of water? Why didn't she see it before? Well, John Gill speculates, perhaps God blinded her eyes so she couldn't see it. Well, why would God do that? I don't think that's a good answer. I think the best answer is she was weeping. She was distracted. She was in distress. She didn't realize that there was a well of water there that she could get water for her and Ishmael so that they would not die in the wilderness. But God directed her to the well. She saw the water. She went and filled the skin with the water and gave the lad a drink. So God, in my opinion, just simply directed Hagar to where the well was. And that shows, that's an example of how God uses natural means to get great results. And when he does that, it's called providence. Providence is a great thing, folks. It's not a miracle, but providence is better than just the natural. It's a wonderful thing. Genesis 21, verses 20 and 21. God was with the lad, and he grew, and he lived in the wilderness and became an archer. He lived in the wilderness of Paran, and his mother took a wife for him from the land of Egypt. Now, it says that Ishmael lived in the wilderness, and then in verse 20, in verse 21, he lived in the wilderness of Paran, and so there's a question of exactly what wilderness is being referred to in verse 20. Could be the wilderness around Beersheba, where they were now, or it could be that he's already moved down to Paran, where he became an archer and lived in Paran. It doesn't really matter. Paran, let's see where that is. If you look at the map, and if you look at just the deserts, as you start with the Sinai Desert, the Sinai Peninsula, and move north, you got the Sinai Desert. Then you got Paran, which is right to the north of the Sinai Peninsula. You go a little bit further north, the wilderness of Zin, at the northern portion of which is Kadesh Barnea, which is the northernmost extent that the Israelites went before they got shut out of walking into the land of Israel, and they wandered around there for 38 years. So that's the wilderness of Sin. Sometimes it's S-I-N and sometimes it's Z-I-N, but it's pronounced Sin. And then if you go north of Sin, you end up in the southern part of Israel, the Negev, or maybe more precisely, the Judean desert, as you get up into Israel. The Negev is sort of a loose term. It can refer, can cover Zin and Paran too, I think. So maybe I should say it goes this way from south to north. The Sinai Desert, the Desert of Paran, the Desert of Sin, and then the Judean Desert. Now, Ishmael is said to have become an archer. He had a son named Kedar, and the Kedarines were famous for archery. We read in Isaiah 21:17 this, and the remainder of the number of bowmen, the mighty men of the sons of Kedar, that's Ishmael's son, and the mighty men of the sons of Kedar will be few, for the God of Israel has spoken. The remainder of the number of bowmen, the mighty men of the sons of Kedar. So the Kedarines were famous archers, probably learned it from their dad, Ishmael. Other descendants of Ishmael were famous for their archery. According to John Gill, the Idureans, those are the people to the in the area to the east of the Sea of Galilee, Bashan and Og territory during the time of the Exodus. The Idureans, another of his sons, from the Idureans comes from Jeter, another one of Ishmael's sons in Genesis 25:15, were remarkable for their bows, of which Virgil speaks, and so the Arabians that live in the deserts around about them, called Nabatees from Nebaoth, another son of Ishmael, are now extraordinary marksmen for bows and arrows. And I need to stop here. Gil has been superseded there because Nebaoth is said to be a son of Ishmael in Genesis, and Nebaoth sounds like Nabateans, and the Nabateans were a well-known Arabian tribe. They, for example, the kingdom of Nabateans created Petra, that famous tourist site which you need to go see if you can sometime. Well, Josephus connected up Nebaioth, the son of Ishmael, with the Nabateans, but modern scholars don't do that anymore. That's according to Wikipedia. Josephus noticed the similarity of sounds and put them together. I did the same thing when I read that. I said, oh, I bet that's the Nabateans. I looked it up on Wikipedia and said, nope, not anymore. And so Gil is probably wrong about there, about that. Gil makes the further point that the Saracens, that's the old name for the Arabian tribes, got their living not by the plow, but chiefly by the bow, and were all of them warriors. Yes, sir. You get these people on the steppes with the composite bow. They can shoot from the horse while it's riding. They can shoot at
their rear, they can shoot at the side, they can shoot at the front, and they were bodaciously awful warriors. Nobody could beat them. The Romans were never able to beat them. The Byzantines never were able to beat them. Of course, it was more than just Arabians. There were also Turkish tribes that came from Central Asia that were also good with the bow. But at any rate, the Arabs have a tradition, let's put it this way, of being bowmen, archers, and they got it from Ishmael, because the Bible does say that Ishmael became an archer. It's kind of interesting. Now, Hagar is said to take Ishmael's wife from Egypt. Hagar was from Egypt, and of course, down there at the wilderness of Paran, you're getting pretty close to Egypt. All you got to do is go west a little bit, and bam, you're in Egypt. And so the Egyptians and the Arabs, assuming that Ishmael's descendants were Arabs, are united, and they've been fighting Israel ever since. Kind of interesting. Like fathers, like sons. Of course, right now, Egypt has a peace treaty with Israel, so maybe they've stopped. But we'll hope that continues. In fact, as a matter of fact, in the last few months of the Trump administration, Trump managed to get three peace deals with three Arabian countries signed with Israel. That's a big deal. Of course, the press didn't say anything about it because they hate Trump. But that is a big deal because the Arabs have been fighting the Israelis. Isaac has been after Ishmael, and Ishmael has been after Isaac for 4,000 years. Ladies and gentlemen, with that unhappy note, we've finished Genesis 21, verses 8 through 21. In our next audio, we will turn to verse 22 and continue through verse 34, and we will look at Abraham making a treaty with Abimelech of Gerar. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.